Welcome to the conference call of TAG Immobilien AG, which is now starting. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. May I now hand you over to Mr. Martin Thiel?
Yeah, good morning from Hamburg. Welcome everybody to our nine-month earnings call. This is Martin from TAG. Thanks for dialing in. Let's start right now with the presentation, which is available on the website, and I think you all had the chance to download it. And we will start at page number four with the highlights for the third quarter and the first 9 months of 2018. Look at the original performance. I think we have a very successful quarter after behind us, which we can now present to you. If you look at the developments in the vacancy rates, I think a strong development, 30 basis points reduction in the residential units from 5.5% to 5.2% at the end of September, and also in the full portfolio, including acquisitions, a 20 basis points reduction of vacancy rate. Strong like-for-like rental growth in the 12-month ending in September, 2.4% as the basis like-for-like rental growth and 2.8% as the like-for-like rental growth, including vacancy reduction. These positive operational development resulted in a strong increase in FFO, more than 1.4 million increase in FFO1 from 36.1 million to 37.5 million as a result for the third quarter. Looking at NAV and LTV, I would say normal developments, EPRA NAV up approximately 20 cents per share. We had no valuation at the end of the third quarter, so just ongoing results that led to the increase in NAV. And in the LTV, a reduction by 80 basis points. And now, for the first time, the LTV below the 50% mark at 49.4%. FFO and dividend guidance, just a quick comment at that stage. I will come back to that in more detail later. We guide for an increase in FFO in absolute amounts and on a per-share basis by 9% for the financial year 2019, and also we guide for an increase in the dividend per share paid for the financial year 2019 by 9%. But as I said, we'll come back to this a little bit later in more detail. Then let's go into the details regarding the financials, and I'm now on page 6 of the presentation, and there's the figures from the income statement. Looking at the net rent, you see an increase quarter on quarter, so between the second and the third quarter, by 300,000 euros. Please have in mind that we were a net seller in the first 9 months of 2018, so the portfolio, the total units of the portfolio were slightly lower than at the beginning of the year, simply because we had closing of disposals, whereas the closing of the new acquisitions, and we'll come back to that later, will be more towards the end of the year. But despite that, still an increase in net rent by 300,000. Also, net rental income increased by approximately 200,000. Here we had effects in both directions, nothing really material. For example, 600,000 higher maintenance expenses, but on the other side, lower operating costs from the good development regarding vacancy rates. Looking at the valuation result, the valuation result is almost zero in the third quarter compared to 230 million in the second quarter of 2018. Clear, we had the full valuation of the portfolio at the end of the second quarter, and we will have the next portfolio valuation at year end in December. Looking at this portfolio valuation, I mean, today it's clearly too early to give you exact numbers, but just to give you a guidance or an idea where we expect to come out with the full portfolio valuation, we clearly expect that a positive trend from the financial years 2017 and from the first half of 2018 will continue. Talking about numbers, in the first half of 2018, we had a portfolio valuation uplift of 5.4%. So looking at the full year, as I said, we don't have the concrete numbers available. But perhaps it's percentage-wise a little bit lower, but just as an effect of the now higher absolute number of the portfolio value, but definitely something I think that is close to this range. So I think what we expect for the valuation at full year is no surprise that we had extremely lower or extremely high valuation results. I think it should continue in the way we had it in the last valuations. Then moving on in the P&L, The next thing to highlight is the net financial results. You see here, looking at the P&L, a strong increase or a strongly improved net financial results. But please have in mind that we had in the second quarter non-cash one-offs. First of all, from the fair value valuation of the equity option of our convertible bonds, and also a one-off from the early repayment of a corporate bond that we repurchased in the second quarter of 2018. This was an effect of approximately 33, 34 million. So the main reason why the net financial results shown in the P&L increased strongly, but important, also the net financial result cash after one-offs improved by approximately 1.4 million quarter on quarter. And here the main reason for this positive development was the repayment of the corporate bond 2013-2018 of 191 million in August 2018. This bond issued in 2013 still had a coupon of more than 5%. So clearly a further improvement in our net financial result cash after one-offs after the repayment of this bond. Income tax, as always, mainly contains deferred taxes. The cash tax expense in the third quarter increased, if you compare it quarter and quarter, by 800,000 euro to 1.6 million. I mean, following the good development regarding our results, we clearly have higher taxable income, so that leads to somewhat higher cash taxes. For the full year, we expect total cash taxes of approximately 5 million, which is still, I think, a moderate tax rate if you compare that perhaps through other companies in the sector. Then moving on to page number 7, where we show the development of EBITDA, FFO and AFFO. I already mentioned that the FFO increased by 1.4 million. If we make it very simple, the main developments were an increase in EBITDA, mainly coming from higher net rental income and also from higher service business. So that we have an increase in EBITDA of 600,000. We've got better net cash financial result of 1.4 million, and we have higher cash taxes of approximately 800,000. So this is, simply speaking, the reason for the good development in our FFO. And also the AFFO increased by 1.2 million from 21.5 million in the previous quarter to 22.7 million. So we see no massive increase in capex between the quarters. Moving on to page number 8, quick look at the balance sheet. Perhaps it's worth mentioning that we have now, as expected, a reduced cash position, which is still quite strong with about 150 million because we repaid the 191 million corporate bond in August. And I already mentioned the LTV reduction from 52.3% at the beginning of the year to 49.4%. And we see here on the right side of page number 8, in the box with a number 4, the change in LTV is, of course, mainly driven by the valuation we had at half year. And you see that the dividend payment and the ongoing results mainly leave the LTV unchanged. So in a, if you want, so theoretical year without any valuation results, the LTV in our company is stable, which is, I think, a good news and a stable basis to operate. And of course, we expect further valuation gains at year-end, so a further reduction in LTV at year-end coming from these valuation gains should be definitely not a surprise. Moving on to page number 9, we see the NAV development. As I said, we had no valuation in the third quarter, so an increase by 21 cents quarter-on-quarter, mainly driven by our operating results. Looking at the full nine-month period, we have now an 11% increase NAV, and even 16% excluding the dividend payment of 65 cents. So also at the NAV side, a very positive development. On slide number 10, you see in the usual format the development of cost of debt and LTV. LTV I already mentioned, but looking at cost of debt, we had a further slight reduction of our cost of debt from 1.99 at the end of the second quarter now to 1.96. And this 1.96 average cost of debt is combined with a very long maturity. So the total maturity of our total financial debt on average is now 8.5 years, which is definitely a very good news, a very good message, and a very solid basis for our financial structure. It's even 9.5 years regarding bank loans. So we think that this is still attractive, 1.96 or already attractive 1.96 average cost of debt combined with somewhat around 9 euros maturity. And if you look at the next page, that's page number 11, on the left side, you see in the third bullet point that there's still potential. So there are approximately 300 million of bank loans maturing in the next 2.5 years, or the interest terms are ending, and these 300 million bank loans have coupons between 1.8 and 3.6%. Most of them have a coupon more in the direction to 3.6%. So the 1.8% refers to the bank loans maturing or interest terms ending in 2018. And if we look at the 2019 and 2020 bank loans, we talk here more about 3.5-3.6% average coupons. So this should leave further room for improvements. Coming to page number 12, a slide you know from us from the half-year results. We just wanted to summarize the very positive development we have not only on the operational side but also on the financing metrics. The ICR is now at 3.7 times in the first 9 months. That compares to 3.5 times in the second quarter. And if we solely look at the second half of 2018, so after the repayment of the corporate bond, leaving the EBITDA as it was in the first half, the ICR will already be more than 4 times. And also net financial debt to EBITDA is improving very well. We're going and heading more towards the 10 times, coming from 13 times in 2015. Then I'm now on page 14, coming to the portfolio. Just a quick comment on this slide. If you look at the number of units, we are now at around 82,000 units, coming from 83,000 units in 2017. This is what I mentioned with my comment to the P&L. We had a rent increase even though we sold more units in the first 9 months than we acquired. And this will change in the next month. We will come to the acquisitions a little bit later. Moving on to slide number 15. We show you in the usual format the development of the vacancy rate. And here we have definitely a very positive development in the third quarter. Perhaps not surprising, at least for us, because we knew that in the first month we had some larger projects that now are finished, at least to the largest part. So we had a reduction of approximately 10 basis points per month from 5.5% to 5.2%. And the strongest reductions in vacancy rates in the financial year 2018 so far have been in the Berlin region with a reduction of 1.4 percentage points, in the Chemnitz region with 0.4 percentage points, and still in the Salzgitter region now below 5% with 0.3%. You see this in the appendix in more detail on page 24. And we can also tell you that the positive trend also continues after the balance sheet date. So if we look into, for example, our October figures, we will see that this run rate of 10 basis points also continued after the balance sheet date. So this should give us a good outlook for the fourth quarter to come. Then on page 16, some words about like-for-like rental growth. First of all, as you see on the left side of this chart, for the first time, we're now presenting a split for the basis like-for-like rental growth, which was at a very good 2.4% in the 12 months ending in the third quarter. This 2.4% consists of approximately 1.4% or percentage point from rent increases from existing tenants, 0.9 percentage points from rent increases after tenant turnover, and just 10 basis points from the modernization surcharge. And you notice from us that we're not starting large modernization programs for existing tenants. The very largest part of our CapEx, and in the appendix you have more details on that, clearly goes continuously to vacancy reduction. And including this into the like-for-like rental growth number, we ended up at 2.8% in the third quarter, which was above the numbers we achieved in the first quarters, which is also not a surprise for us. It clearly requires now a little bit more CapEx. So if you want, so the low-hanging fruits from vacancy reduction, and that's also good news that we've done that, have been harvested in the last 1 or 2 years. So now looking at maintenance and CapEx altogether, we are around 14 euros in the first 9 months. If you analyze that, that's a number then of 18 euros and 60 cents for a full 12 month period. That compares to numbers between 15 and 16 euros per square meter in the 3 years before. So yes, clearly higher, but still, I think, a moderate level and something that you also should expect for us from the futures. Just one comment on the development in a different region. Looking at the basis like rental growth, which was on average the 2.4%, the strongest region was the Hamburg region with a basis like-for-like rental growth of 3.8%, and second was Berlin region with 3.5% like-for-like rental growth. Both regions, perhaps not a big surprise, but also with a strong like-for-like rental growth, basis like-for-like rental growth without vacancy reduction of 3.5% was the Salzgitter region. And this is perhaps a good example where you see that with reduced vacancy rates, we clearly see like-for-like rental growth picking up simply because now we've got more demand and perhaps in the re-letting process we not only have one tenant waiting in front of our door, perhaps two or three tenants are waiting, and that makes it easier for us to increase rents for existing tenants and also, of course, in the re-letting process. Then I'm now on slide 18, coming to acquisitions. If you look at the table on slide number 18, you know the first two small acquisitions from us already from the previous presentations. We can today announce two further acquisitions, one small acquisition of 73 units in Riesa in Saxony, and a larger acquisition of 1,266 units, mainly located in Schwerin. If you look at the vacancy rates, I think that's typical TAG portfolios, 8% in the Riesa portfolio, 6.5% in the Schwerin portfolio, so this should provide further upsides. Talking about prices, please understand we agreed confidentiality about the purchase price regarding the Schwerin portfolio. Just speaking generally about that, I think if you would see the purchase price or the multiple, that would be nothing that would surprise you. So I would say typical TG dimensions you know from us in 2017 and 2018, a portfolio that fits extremely well into our existing locations. So 1,500 units all in all acquired in the first 9 months of 2018. Looking at the pipeline, I mean, it's difficult to forecast that, but this should not be the end for the financial year 2018. But as I explained, I think quite often, it's difficult for us to give you here exact forecast. So let's see what happens in the final weeks of the year, if we can announce to you further acquisitions with the full year results. Moving on to page number 19, disposals. No major news on this side. In the third quarter, we had some ongoing disposals, now 355 units in the first 9 months all in all, after 312 units in the first 6 months of 2018, so that we ended up at 800 units so far sold in the first 9 months of 2018. So as we said before, we are clearly still a net buyer. It was more something temporarily that we've been a net seller in the first 6 months. And looking into the disposal pipeline, something that you can clearly expect from us again is that we continuously do these ongoing disposals, which is privatization, which is smaller block sales. But also you should expect, and you will see this later on in the guidance, that we do again something on the non-core side. So we have currently a portfolio on the market with approximately 1,600 units. There's no time pressure on that, and it's not yet decided if we sell it really as a full block, the 1,600 units, or if it is the better way, because it has quite a lot of locations, perhaps to sell it in separate transaction that would then perhaps take a little bit longer time. So 1,600 units are penciled in the new guidance for 2019 already as a disposal. It could also be the case that the disposal of this non-core asset takes place not only in 2019, but in 2019 and 2020. So just to make it clear, a little bit more non-core assets that we want to sell. But if you look at the numbers, 1,600 units out of 82,000 units, there's nothing really strategic. And as I said, there's no pressure on that. So and then as a last slide, and I think a very important slide for today, page number 21, the new guidance for the financial year 2019. First of all, we leave the guidance for the financial year 2018 unchanged. But if you look at the numbers, I think it's fair to say that the 2018 guidance is quite conservative. So even an FFO of 34 million, which is approximately 3 million lower than what we had in the third quarter, would lead to the midpoint of the guidance. And of course, it's always a little bit difficult for us to estimate the exact cash taxes and also to a certain extent to estimate exact maintenance expenses, which always has a kind of seasonality. But please have in mind that this guidance for 2018 should be definitely achievable. Then looking at the new guidance, I already mentioned that we guide for an increased FFO by 9%. And this 9% increase is also is the case, although we penciled in disposals of 2,100 units. These 2,100 units consist of the 1,600 units non-core assets I already mentioned and the 500 units from our ongoing disposals that we continuously have. So these disposals lead to an FFO reduction in 2019, at least to an estimated FFO reduction of 3 million. Or, speaking in other words, if we would not include these disposals in the guidance, then the guidance would be 3 million higher. So important to have this in mind. The new midpoint of the guidance is 155 million, and that translates into an FFO per share of 1.06 euro. And we're also publishing today the new dividend guidance for the financial year 2019, then paid in 2020, which is still 75% of FFO, and this is then a number of 80 cents per share, which is, as we think, definitely attractive payout ratio and an attractive dividend. If you look at the main reasons for the increase in the new guidance, so on a year-on-year basis, compared 2018 to 2019, you see this also explained in the main effects on this slide. The 13 million increase in total is driven, first of all, by higher rental income, approximately 9 million, and by reduced financing costs, again, another approximately 9 million. On the other side, we have higher maintenance expenses by 2 million, which is mainly driven by increasing prices that we expect. So not higher maintenance on more projects, but simply prices that we see increasing, and higher cash taxes of approximately 3 million. So we expect an increase in the cash tax from this year, approximately 5 million to 8 million in the next year. That's the main driver. These are the main drivers for the 13 million increase in FFO, which is, even after considering these disposals, what we think at an attractive number of 155 million. That's it from my side. Thank you so far for listening to the presentation. And of course, I'm now happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. The operator will announce your name when it's your turn to ask a question. In case you wish to cancel your question, please press star 2. Mr. Bernd Jansen from Victoria Partners, may we have your question, please?
Yeah, good morning. One question regarding the disposal. Two parts to that. One, are you intending to mainly undertake these disposals as share deals or asset deals? I know that you said it might be that you're selling them in lots rather than as a whole. So the question obviously related to potential changes to the red blocker as of sometime next year. Second question, could you guide us a bit on what type of non-core assets these are? So is it more like lower quality assets in remote locations that you're intending to sell, or would it also be called higher quality, where you think that they are very mature in terms of valuations and therefore are basically taking profits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Ben, for your questions. First of all, regarding the structure of disposals, these will be very surely asset deals. And just a comment on perhaps the new changes we expect from the regulation side regarding real estate transfer tax and share deals. For example, the acquisition that we announced today in Schwerin was a share deal, but we did not use a red blocker structure for it. Mm. Because we think today it's really uncertain how the future outcome of this discussion is, and we're not sure whether structures that we had in the past still work. And if we look at the proposals that are on the table and in the meanwhile are quite concrete, that say at perhaps the most important change that now you need minority shareholders of more than 10% for the next 10 years, that makes share deals in the structure where in the past, from an economic point of view, at least from our point of view, not really attractive. So in this case, we paid the real estate transfer taxes. We acquired 100% of the shares of the company because we said that's, for us, from an economic point of view, the better decision than to give away for 10 years to a 10% shareholder ongoing profits, as well as perhaps a good portfolio development that we clearly expect from, or that we clearly expect from this acquisition. So we think that the share deal structures, the real estate transfer tax structures we had in the past are now not really interesting. And then regarding your question to the type of non-core assets, it's mixed. First of all, of course, there are some locations in there where we say, okay, at the moment, not really a problem, but we're not sure how, for example, demographic development in the next 5 to 10 years will be. And on the other side, it's also a kind of portfolio optimization that we said, okay, the location is perhaps not too bad, but we just own 50 units. And then for a more efficiency point of view, it makes more sense for us to sell that. It's not the case that we have very strong locations in this kind of non-core assets like Hamburg or Dresden or Leipzig.
So I guess I should have used the word capital recycling. So in that regard, not really capital recycling, but more optimization of the portfolio, which should then mean that we should assume sales multiples that are closer to your average valuation today rather than call it premium valuations.
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair assumption. Talking about capital recycling, that means disposals in stronger locations. This will also continue. But at the moment, we have enough cash in the balance sheet to finance new acquisitions. So, and we are clearly harmonizing that. So that means perhaps disposals in stronger locations, as you know from us from the past, is nothing to expect for 2018, but will be on the table again in 2019, 2020, still with the unchanged idea to sell at very high multiples in strong locations like we did, for example, in Berlin in the past, and then reinvest the net cash proceeds from these disposals into high-yielding portfolios in our TAG regions in Eastern Germany.
So one quick follow-up on the red blocker, as you were elaborating on your expectations, kind of the economic sense in the future. Would you expect that if one would undertake acquisitions in share deals with a red blocker, so less than 95% today at a time where the new law has not been, I think, presented, as I understand, in the, I think it would have to start probably in the, I don't know, in the upper house, would you still be able to execute under the old red blockers structure, or would you be potentially affected by upcoming changes to the tax law?
Yeah, that's exactly the risk we currently have, and we said, okay, we cannot go this risk. So yes, of course, there are arguments to say, well, if you do it in the old structure, that should still work because the new law is not concrete, so it's not even a proposal, but we have very clear press releases from the Ministry of Finance, and we simply cannot exclude that the new law is also or also applies to transactions we do now. Okay. So therefore, from our side, the risk was too high to say, okay, we hope that the old structure still works. It's at the moment a very uncertain situation, and we decided not to go to risk.
Very good. Thank you.
Herr Georg Kanders, Mr. Georg Kanders from Bankhaus Lampe, may we have your question, please?
Good morning from Düsseldorf. Just regarding the expectations for the fourth quarter, actually you are expecting a reduction in the FFO, and you mentioned probably some higher maintenance spending to come at the year-end. Are there any other factors that could affect this?
Thank you for the question, Georg, and perhaps I have to make this a little bit more clear. Basically, we're not expecting a reduction in FFO. So, as I said, the guidance for 2018 is conservative. So if you put on top the third quarter results on the first 9 months, you end up approximately, I think, 3 million above the midpoint of the current guidance. So then the question is, okay, why did we not increase the guidance today? First of all, we think, well, that's not really a material change. And then secondly, just to be a little bit more conservative, it's always a little bit difficult to estimate the exact outcome of cash taxes and also to estimate the exact outcome of maintenance. First thing, cash taxes is simply a complex calculation. And the second thing, maintenance has a kind of seasonality. I mean, of course, we have now a quite good view and don't expect any major negative surprises. But let's say it like this, if we beat the guidance for 2018 from our side, it would not be a surprise.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you very much.
Mr. Manuel Martin from ODDO, may we have your question, please?
Yes, hello. Just two questions on the portfolio. You were able to reduce the vacancy rate, and I saw that Berlin showed a nice reduction in vacancy rate to 4.9% from 5.3% quarter on quarter. When it comes to Berlin, where do you see your structural vacancy rate in your Berlin portfolio? I mean, Berlin overall has a lower vacancy rate, but maybe in your locations it's a bit higher.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question. I mean, in our case, the Berlin portfolio is a portfolio consisting completely with out of Berlin commuter bus locations. So locations like Brandenburg an der Havel, Strausberg, Eberswalde, Nauen. And we clearly have the highest vacancy rate in the Berlin region in Brandenburg an der Havel, a location that we presented to you in our Capital Markets Day in summer this year. And especially in Brandenburg an der Havel, we see a really good progress. So in locations like Nauen and Strausberg, we are almost perhaps at a kind of minimum level, not only since this quarter, but also I think 1 or 2 years back, which is then around 1.52%, and still have a continuously very strong like-for-like rental growth, even without vacancy reduction. So if you look at page 24 in the appendix, I think we also have included there the numbers for 2017, where we had basis like-for-like rent growth in the Berlin region of something around 3.5%. So we clearly expect this to continue. And then the potential in Brandenburg an der Havel is clearly there. So the 4.9% should definitely not be the end of the road. I think, as just as an estimate, it should go more towards 3%, perhaps even lower.
Okay. Thank you. Second question, I almost forgot. It's a little detail. I've seen in your tax position that there's been also deferred taxes in Q1 and also in Q3, although there were no valuation gains. Any idea of that detail? Where does that come from?
Yeah, the answer is quite simple. Even in a quarter where we have no valuation gain, there is a difference quarter on quarter between IFRS valuation and tax valuation, because in the tax accounting as well as in the German commercial code accounting, we have an ongoing depreciation of the assets. So, and if the IFRS value stays stable regarding tax accounting, we have quarter on quarter ongoing depreciation and a reduced value. So from this is the reason for the deferred taxes that we have continuously every quarter.
Oh, okay. Very clear. Thank you.
The next question comes from André Remke from Baader Bank. Mr. Remke, your question, please.
Yeah, good morning, Martin. A question left on the acquisition side. For the smaller portfolio, almost paid 14 times, even if it's a very small portfolio, what is the attractiveness of such a portfolio to buy? And a related question, did I get you right that we should not fear that the larger portfolio will have such a multiple, so more again than in the magnitude of 10 to 12 times? And probably last related question on the acquisition side in general, if acquisitions would really become more pricey and you showed us 2 weeks ago with your presentation of the housing report in Eastern Germany that this is the case, would you reduce in general your previous indications of buying roughly, let's say, 4,000 units per year also going forward?
Andreas, thank you for the questions. Talking about multiples, the 13.9 times we paid for the Riesa portfolio, the 73,000 units, I think that's clearly, the portfolio is clearly the value. It's not only the 8% vacancy rate that offers potential, but also, I mean, we've inserted a little picture, the quality of the portfolio is really extremely good. So from our point of view, this was really a purchase price that made sense. And then talking about general prices, and again, I mean, we have to keep the purchase price for the larger transaction confidential, but it should be more in regions that you know, perhaps from 2017 and other acquisitions in 2018. Buying portfolios, even in Eastern Germany, with higher vacancy rates, at a 10 times multiple, as you know from us, from 2015, 2016, these times are clearly over. So prices are up, which is on the acquisition side, not the best news, but of course something that first of all confirms our strategy and secondly helps us in the valuation. So when we talk in 2017 on average more at a gross yield for acquisitions of more than 8%, perhaps it's in the end 2018, 2019, more a gross yield of 7%. But looking at that gross yield, 7% with upside potential from vacancy reductions in regions where we already are so that we can integrate it efficiently in our platform, from our point of view, still makes sense to buy. But as also said in the past, you will not see from us acquisitions at multiples that go then in other directions just to demonstrate external growth. So generally, regarding acquisition sizes, regarding acquisition strategies, I would say this is unchanged, but you can, of course, expect that we will continuously be disciplined regarding pricing of new acquisitions.
Okay. And also, you would today also repeat what you indicated before, buying, let's say, 3,000 to 5,000 units per year should be possible.
Yeah. And as I also said, acquisitions is cyclical. So as you know from us, for example, in 2017, in the first month, we had very high number of acquisitions. And that's very normal that you have months where there's perhaps a lot of processes, but you at the end, you don't get it because other people pay higher prices. And then you have a series of two or three acquisitions in a row. So this is also the reason why we have not an official guidance and we're not promising you that we acquire some thousands units, but just speaking generally, we feel that this is still possible in the market, that in a normal year we acquire sizes like 3,000 or all in all more than 3,000 units plus.
Okay. And a last question on the financing side for such portfolios. What is the current, let's say, indication from financing banks?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a 10-year bank loan. I would say on average, perhaps for new bank loans, we talk about, let's say, 80 basis points for the margin. And if we put today's 10-year swap rate on that, which is around, I think, 95 basis points, then you end up at something around, let's say, 1.7, 1.8% for 10-year bank debt, mortgage secured all in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
For further questions, please press star 1. Mr. Thiel, there are no further questions.
Okay, then. Thank you very much all for listening to our call. As always, we're, of course, available for any questions. Please contact Dominique from our art department or myself. Do not hesitate to contact us. And then that's it from our side. Have a nice day and bye-bye.
We want to thank Mr. Thiel and all the participants of this conference. Thank you and goodbye.